This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
How you doing this morning? It's already underway. Projects and a flurry of activity at the House of Jones this morning, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. Just greeted the girls, told them that that I was on again today. And let's just say the flurry of questions that came after that came fast and furious. First off, why? Why are you on again today? And I said, good question, girls. But the crew has asked me to fill in. Mark Packer is still out. Yeah. Pack, get well soon. The second question that I always get is, can I talk to Mr. Wes? And with two minutes before we go on to the show, that is a difficult question to answer to a 3- and a 2-year-old when I say, no, you can't talk to him right now. But we always talk to him. And I said, I know. So there was a whole negotiation that's already happened. But I'm good, partner. How are you?
I'm great. We've got plenty to go this morning. 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock this morning, friends. We will have the official ACC preseason football team and the preseason player of the year announcement as determined by the media panel last week at the ACC kickoff in Charlotte. So that comes up at 9 o'clock. We're looking forward to bringing that to you. We've got a really good show. Heather Dinich will be here at 8 o'clock, of course, covers the college football playoff for ESPN.com. And then at 8:30, Pete Sampson, who follows Notre Dame and does it very well for The Athletic, will be here. Everything good, Roddy? You're holding focus. You're holding strong.
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm locked in with you. I don't know. Maybe we may get someone screaming. I don't know if everything is good.
Yeah. Question. All right. Pete Sampson here at 8:30. Then at 9:30, Tom Luginbill will be here. We'll get his analysis of the ACC kickoff and more as we head into the start of camps, which will actually begin about a week from today. I know the roadshow starts on August the 4th, which is a Wednesday, but some of those camps will be reporting over the weekend, and practices will begin as early as Monday around the ACC footprint. Let's get to the 10-12 rule. Not the 10-05 rule, the 10-12 rule, because that's when the announcement yesterday morning came that David Teal spoke of, Roddy, and that is that Texas and Oklahoma did send a letter to the Big Ten saying they would not be renewing their media rights with the Big 12 when the current deal expires in 2025. That essentially is an open signal to everybody that Texas and Oklahoma are on the market. Obviously, the heavy speculation continues about the SEC.
Yeah, and the reports came out that Oklahoma and Texas had conversations with the officials in the Big 12 over the weekend and into yesterday about what they could do to try and address some of the concerns that both of those schools have. But look, this thing has been in the works for reportedly 6 months. There was nothing that was going to stop Oklahoma and Texas from sending that letter yesterday, not renewing their media grants, the media rights grant. So it's no surprise. It's just the first official step that we've seen since this was reported last Wednesday. But it still feels a little surreal that that's where we're headed. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Well, okay. Here's kind of the landscape of this a little bit from the aspect of how much you need to know and how it fits right now. Really, Texas and Oklahoma saying they wouldn't be renewing their media rights at the end of 25, that still doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to leave the Big 12. It just means that they're not going to renew the rights agreement as it currently stands. So if Bob Bowlsby and some of the other people in the Big 12 want to get together and craft a pie that's cut differently than the one that is cut now financially, then that is certainly possible, and Texas and Oklahoma could stay. There are also other elements about the Big 12 where I think you got to play the long game here a little bit. As I was reminded when Maryland left the ACC, and it's ironic we just showcased this in the John Swofford special that aired a week ago tonight on ACC Network. Sometimes you have to realize that as mad as you get about this, you've got to be able to rebound and kind of continue on. The other thing about it with Texas and Oklahoma is if they want to leave before 25, somebody's going to get in the neighborhood of about $156 million from those two institutions combined, because that's what the get out of jail card is for the Big 12 with the media rights deal. The other part about this, Texas and Oklahoma have to formally inform the Southeastern Conference that they want to join. So that brings another aspect into this, which is also kind of curious to the process, because then that brings a very confidential and very private aspect of conference athletic administration to the forefront. And Roddy, that is a voting element of this, because it is well known. I mean, look, it's got to be 11. They've got to get 11 votes in the Southeastern Conference in order to ratify the membership of Oklahoma and Texas. Now, time and again, these processes have occurred, and at the end of the day, somebody will come out and say, it was a unanimous vote, okay? And that, to me, is, okay, great. Show me your unity, but don't show me a fool. I mean, you right. want to tell me it was unanimous? That's fine. You can say it. We know good and well it won't be unanimous. And if they took it today, I got to believe the guys in College Station, Texas would not be happy and vote no. So you can't tell me it was unanimous. Right. I think the wiggle room here is really interesting. And the calendar is really interesting. Do I think Oklahoma and Texas are going to go to the Southeastern Conference? Probably. But I also think this could get really, really weird based on the college football playoff and the timeline of the get-out card in the Big 12 as well.
Yeah, it definitely could. And the timing of it is going to be interesting, because let's say Oklahoma and Texas decide that they are going to leave, and they notify both the Big 12 and the SEC. They are accepted as members of the SEC. And then they say, but we don't want to pay that money, so we'll stick around and pay that money to the Big 12. So we'll stick around until 2025. Well, that's a terrible situation for everybody. Big 12, the Oklahoma and Texas, the SEC, it's a bad situation for everybody. So the hope in that case is that there's some negotiation there. Like, hey, we won't pay you 70 whatever million each. We'll pay you 30 whatever million each for the last 3 years. And we'll stay in until 23 or 24. So there's going to be some negotiation here. It's not going to happen overnight. But it sure seems to go that way. And then the question is, how does that change the landscape for conferences like the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the ACC, and the Big 10 to some extent as well, though the Big 10 from a revenue standpoint is who the SEC is chasing. And the more I think about it, the Big 12, it obviously changes a lot. The Pac-12, the Big 10, and the ACC in particular, because the ACC's media rights run through 2036, making it, for all intents and purposes, too expensive for any school to get out. Even for the Big Ten, that's even correct. For the SEC, it would be way too expensive. So the more I think about it, the more you think, if the situation doesn't fit, maybe the ACC is fine the way it is, because what has really changed? You're still going to be third in terms of media rights distribution, behind the Big Ten, behind the SEC. The college football playoff access, even if it goes to 12 and the SEC eats up all those spots, your highest rated conference champion is still going to get in. And if you have a one-loss team, they're probably going to get in too over a four-loss SEC team. I don't care who's playing in that league, because that team is not going to have played Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas, and the 85 Bears. They're just not going to have played all those. That schedule would be brutal. And if they do and lose to all those four, I don't think they get in, because those are the teams that we're going to see in anyway. So the more I think about it, the more it makes sense for the ACC to just kind of hold pat and say, all right, let's see how this all shakes out. I know there's a rush to want to renegotiate that deal from a lot of people, the media rights deal, to try and get more money. But doing it fast and getting it wrong may not be the way to go.
I don't disagree with you. I think, in fact, it's going to get – I think the timeline to the new proposal of the college football playoff and when that playoff begins is now your new landmark if you're anybody other than the Southeastern Conference who's trying to get Texas and Oklahoma on board so they can get a brand new media rights deal with our boss, ESPN. especially given now that they've acquired the Saturday afternoon primetime game from CBS and those negotiations. Now, as the ACC relates, here's the thing, and Pete Sampson's on with us, and we're not going to talk about Brian Kelly's preseason practice when Pete gets here at 8:30, because this is a Pete wrote a story about Notre Dame and their independence in The Athletic on Sunday, and it's an excellent piece. It's not a good piece. It's an excellent piece, and he talks about the attitude and the theories involved in the independence of Notre Dame. Notre Dame's football independence is based on a lot of things. One is the history of the institution and the logic behind its founding, among other things. Secondly, it's important to know that Notre Dame likes the ACC arrangement a lot. And I know there are a lot of people that want a get-in or get-out concept with the Irish. Roddy, I just don't sense that unless the landscape shakes so much that Notre Dame is going to jump. Now, does the 12-team proposal play to their strength? Absolutely. Does the 8-team proposal play to their strength? Probably not as much. But Notre Dame got in this year as a 4. Could they get in at an 8 as an independent? Probably. In a 12, I like their chances a lot better. But here's the other thing, too. 16, the even number, is not always the answer in this, okay? A lot of people are saying, well, you know, we're talking about concepts of premier leagues and college athletics and all that. I look at this as saying, you better make the 30-year decision here, not the 3-year decision. And I said some of that yesterday, and the more and more I think about it, the more I'm convinced. You better make sure that you get like-minded institutions in play here if you're the Atlantic Coast Conference. It's one of the pillars of the conference itself. Like-minded institutions that can be collegial around the table, that can get you playing football in a pandemic like last year, that presidents have the great attitude. Remember, for the last 3 or 4 months, I told you I think this is the best collection of athletic directors the league has ever seen. No offense to people that have been ADs before and their groupings, but I think this one is really, really, really good. And I think all that's imperative. This league will know its own timeline. It's not necessarily going to follow the house on fire down the street, which is in Birmingham. Is that making a lot of news right now? Sure it is. But the other element that I find fascinating about this is watching the posturing going on in other leagues. Look, you're right. No matter what the ACC does, it's still going to be third in meteorites. The Big 8, or the Big 12 rather, and the Pac-12 right now are on the clock in a lot of ways. It's going to be really, really interesting to see just kind of how the gold rush is constructed here once Oklahoma and Texas do go to the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, and to be honest, everything that you're hearing out of the Big 12, which, by the way, like, I am for going back to calling it the Big 8 once those two leave. Can we do that? Can we make that happen? I think we can. It's not the same Big 8, but I think we can. Everything you hear out of the Big 12 right now is that those 8 schools are going to stick together, but it's sort of an interesting experiment in game theory, because all of them have to be looking at contingencies. And if one of them, West Virginia, if one of them gets a better offer or an offer that is more desirable to them, then it kind of crumbles the whole thing. And West Virginia has not been all that bashful in its interest in this league. West Virginia, it was reported, wanted to get in the league back in 2011. It didn't fit then. Does it fit now? But I thought David Hale brought up a really great point yesterday. The ACC's media rights distribution to its member institutions is just north of $30 million right now. To get a $1 million increase per school, that school that you add has to bring in $45 million. Does any school across the country, with the exception of Notre Dame, do that? That's the question. No. And I think the answer is yes. There are schools out there, but do any of them make sense for the ACC? The answer is probably no, which leads you to the point that the ACC is likely going to stand pat, I would guess. Now, the restriction to the college football playoff by going to 8 could blow up the Oklahoma-Texas thing. It could also force Notre Dame's hand if they lose access to the college football playoff. And then scheduling, like David Thiel talked about yesterday. But as it stands right now, I wouldn't be surprised if you had every other conference just kind of hanging out for, I don't know if 2 years is too long, but at least a football season or so.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch the next big landmark date for me after yesterday is when the College Football Playoff Committee announces its formal proposal and what they plan to do and the timeline on doing it. Because, by the way, if that process doesn't start till 24-25, there's really no need to rush if you're Texas or Oklahoma here and go, you know, dig through the couches for 160 some million dollars.
So it's been really interesting to think through all of the iterations of how this thing could come together and what's going on on the back end, how the group of five and the SEC were probably aligned and wanting 12 teams. Jack Swarbrick's also sitting there probably like, 12 teams, let's go. Well, now that let's just call it what it is. Now that Texas A&M has leaked this information last week, The play for them is to try and get the College Football Playoff to stay at 8, because that then it doesn't make sense for Oklahoma and Texas to go to a league where the access is going to be so much more restricted, particularly Oklahoma. Texas hasn't had access to it no matter what, but particularly Oklahoma, that's where it could fall apart. So now it's going to be interesting to think through, okay, who wants the 8 and who wants the 12? Because I would guarantee you that Bob Bowlesby of the Big 12 is going to be walking in there like, let's go with 8 for two reasons. Let's go with 8 and let's go with whatever we do, let's do it quick so that we can either get our money or mess up Oklahoma and Texas's plans.
All right. There's the talk, at least at the top, about where all this is in the now bubbling landscape of college athletics, at least here in late July. When we come back, we told you the All-ACC preseason team and player comes up at 9 o'clock. Roddy and I compare our ballots offensively and defensively before we get to 9 o'clock. I got Jahmyr Gibbs. Roddy's got Mateo Durant on the ballot. Who else is different? Who else is similar? We'll get back to it right after this. Packer and Durham on a Tuesday morning on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We are rolling on a Tuesday. We have had a lot of activity go on here on the Packer and Durham show. Roddy's in for Mark. Pack's on the road to recovery. Come on, big fella. Get the final turn. Let's go.
We're in the home stretch.
That's it. The idea that we are going to compare ballots before the ballot is announced at 9, I'm kind of okay with. I hesitated momentarily on this idea. But
did you?
I think I'm all right. Yes, I hesitated. I wasn't for this for about 5 minutes, and I went, okay, I'll go ahead and cannonball into the pool here, if you will. 9 o'clock, we'll give you the official preseason ballot. But we're going to give you the offensive ballot I put together and the offensive ballot Roddy puts together. Now, there are going to be some similarities. There are also some differences. Let's start with the backfield, the QBs and the running backs. And here's what we've got. Needless to say, Sam Howell got both of our votes at quarterback.
Yep.
Bam Knight.
No surprise there.
Is one of our running backs, and then we had a split, Roddy.
Yeah, I went with Mateo Durant. You went with Jahmyr Gibbs, and in the effort of all transparency, Jahmyr Gibbs is on my ballot. He's just not at the running back position because I wanted Mateo Durant. And here's why: if you ask people across the league who is the back with over 100 carries last year that led the league in yards per carry, I bet if you ask 10 people, one of them would get the right answer. It's Mateo Durant. Amongst backs with 100 carries last year, Michael Carter averaged 7.98. Ridiculous. Khalil Herbert, 7.68. Javonte Williams, 7.26. And Mateo Durant was at 6.81 per carry. The dude was explosive. Mm-hmm. He gave that Duke offense a big burst. And I think Duke is going to be better on offense, particularly in the offensive line, which means Mateo Durant's going to have a big year.
I have Jahmyr Gibbs on here because I think Jahmyr Gibbs can do everything except walk up and down the steps in the West Stands and sell Cokes. I mean, I think when healthy, the full package, and he catches it out of the backfield. I think he can run it. You're going to see him a couple more times on my ballot. I just think he's a guy that that if given the chance this year, could put up some sick numbers. If Georgia Tech is just that much better in the offensive line, Roddy, I think Jahmyr Gibbs could have a spectacular season for Jeff Collins' team.
I completely agree. I have no arguments about Jahmyr Gibbs. That's why I wanted to make it clear that he is on my ballot. He is an incredible player. Health is going to be play a part in it as well. I mean, let's not forget, he missed the last two games, really two and a half games, with that hamstring injury. Didn't play early in the season against Florida State. But the first time he touched the ball last year, he took a kickoff 75 yards. So he is explosive. Yeah. He is as good as there is in this league, maybe the best running back there is in this league. And I love the versatility that he brings.
All right. Now, when it comes to Bam Knight, Zonovan Knight of NC State, Devin Leary, all the wide receivers, Grant Gibson at center, all the packaging. But when number seven gets the ball, he makes it happen. Now, I don't know that he's as explosive as Gibbs, but Roddy, he is right there in terms of the ability to lead this league in rushing and have a major impact in scoring as well.
Well, he's not as explosive as Jahmyr Gibbs, but that's like saying people aren't as explosive as Reggie Bush. Like that comparison is a tough one to live up to. Bam Knight is a great back. He's got an NFL body. Vision is fantastic. And let's not forget, he made an impact on special teams last year as well. He took a kickoff back for a touchdown. So Bam Knight has the ability to affect the game in multiple ways. And the fact that he is going to get the bulk of the carries, but Ricky Person's still there. Jordan Houston still there. They've got guys to spell him to keep him fresh. He is a guy that's getting a lot of hype from the NFL draft people in terms of where he can slot come next season when the NFL draft rolls around. So I am really excited to see what Bam Knight does with that offensive line in the second year under Tim Beck.
All right, let's go to the wide receivers, the tight end, and the all-purpose players on the offensive side before we get to the line play. And you're going to see some differences here and some similarities. Roddy and I both like Zay Flowers, Ja'Cory Roberson at wide receiver, James Mitchell at tight end. We differ in the third wide receiver and in the all-purpose player. I'll let you go first.
Yeah. So I went Justin Ross from Clemson because if Justin Ross is back and he's healthy, you got to put him on this list. He's been one of the most productive receivers in the league when he's been healthy the last couple of seasons when he played. So I liked Justin Ross. I understand not going with him because he didn't play last year, but he's going to play in the slot for Clemson if he is indeed cleared like we all expect him to be. And I expect him to have a big season. And then Jahmyr Gibbs I had as my all-purpose player, as I kind of hinted to before. He's a guy that's capable of leading the league in all-purpose yards, so I had to get him on there somewhere. But you went with Charleston Rambo, Wes, which I don't hate. I actually kind of like that pick, but why did you go with Charleston Rambo?
I went with Charleston Rambo because I think Charleston Rambo is going to be the beneficiary of what Will Mallory and Mike Harley force in coverage. You have to make a decision if you're defending Miami in the perimeter. You've got to decide how you're going to play. A straight zone, Roddy, I don't think straight cover two handles those three guys. And Rambo, to me, 2 years ago at Oklahoma, was a guy that put a blitzkrieg on in the Big 12. I mean, he was a guy that ran down the seam. He ran the outs. He ran into the boundary a lot. He can line up all over the field. I think he's a perfect fit for what De'Eriq King does. And then you add Mallory and Harley in the scheme as well. Plus, oh, by the way, they can run the ball a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, Charleston Rambo is one-on-one. Look, and I agree with you about Justin Ross. If he comes back at 100%, I think he's going to be phenomenal. I think the odd guy out, if that happens in my ballot, would have been Ja'Cory Roberson. By the way, we didn't know about the Donovan Green injury when we voted. At least I didn't have it confirmed right at the time. But if Donovan Green – now, the Donovan Green injury at Wake Forest forces more to Ja'Cory Roberson, and that makes it a little more difficult, I think, for him to maybe post the numbers we anticipate. Still remains to be seen. I just think Charleston Rambo, by the way, on the backside is a great fit at Miami. I think there are a lot of transfers that went to good programs, upgraded their situation, but I think Rambo's the guy.
Well, and here's the other thing that plays to your Charleston Rambo pick, which again, I don't hate it at all. I actually kind of like it. When you look at what Rhett Lashley did when he was at SMU, look at the number of passes Courtland Sutton caught his last season. Look at the number of passes James Prochet caught when he was at SMU under Rhett Lashley. Like, those dudes are catching 80 to 90 balls a year because that's what Rhett Lashley did under Sonny Dykes. Now, will it be the exact same at Miami? Probably not. But if he's got a receiver that he likes, that ball is going to go there over and over and over. And if Charleston Rambo can prove to be that guy, he's going to catch 70, 80, maybe even get up to 90 passes this season.
By the way, I want to add something about tight end here with James Mitchell. It was a – yes, he's the tight end that I voted for. But the competitive nature of that spot, Roddy, that's a deep spot in the ACC this year. I don't think a lot of people understand. Lucas Kroll at Pitt is there. Garrett Walston at Carolina. All the guys Clemson has got. Davis Allen, you know, Galloway. I mean, take your choice here. That is a deep position in this league. And while Mitchell is the pick, there are a lot of customers with him.
Yeah, Marshawn Ford from Louisville. We're told that there's he's going to be out at receiver some this year. Obviously, Will Mallory down at Miami. Like, there are a lot of really good tight ends in this league, which after the departure of Hunter Long and Brevin Jordan, you would think that the league would take a significant step back at tight end, and I'm not sure it has. Now, will any of them be as high a draft pick as Hunter Long? We'll have to see. But the league is really, really good at tight ends still. So that one's a tough one. That one's one of the deeper positions in the league. And while James Mitchell is probably going to be the pick, there's a lot of guys that have an argument.
All right. By the way, Roddy's deepest position is not tight end in his analysis of the ACC. No. We'll get to his deepest position at about 9:15 this morning. Okay. Real quick, let's go to the offensive line. We got a lot of similarities here. In fact, we have four similarities and one change. And I don't know. It's flip a coin on Brock Hoffman or Alec Lindstrom. Everybody else, I think, is pretty well deserving. And quite frankly, easy for me to pick. I chose Alec Lindstrom. You chose Brock Hoffman in the line.
It's six in one hand, half dozen in the other. Just like the nastiness that Brock Hoffman brings. I like the sort of bravado that he brings from the center position. So that's why I voted for him. Is he a better player than Alec Lindstrom? I'll let the offensive line people decide that. In my estimation, they are both really, really excellent centers there in the middle. Both of these guys deserve it. We'll see who ends up being on the official ballot at 9 o'clock. But either one, whichever way it goes, I think they're very deserving.
Yeah. So the offensive line it literally came down to splitting hairs a little bit on two or three positions. You could make the same case at one of the tackle spots, that kind of deal. So, all right, there's a look at our picks. That's not the official. That's 9 o'clock, and we'll get to that for you then. We also will do this at 8:15 where we give you the defensive side of the ball. And then a special treat in the 9 o'clock hour I was telling you about a moment ago. When we come back, a couple of in case you missed it today. First one is with Jeff Hafley, coach at Boston College, who against all odds last year, COVID, no spring ball, no offseason, put together a 6-win campaign at Chestnut Hill. And he's back for more. I got to be honest with you, pretty excited about it too. He'll visit with Jordan and EJ when we continue on Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Tuesday Packer and Durham continues on ACC Network. Great to have you with us. Coming up, Heather Dinich, top of the hour, and before the 8 o'clock hour, award-winning fill-in-the-blank. But first, Jeff Hafley from last week in Charlotte, in case you missed it. Yeah, award-winning fill-in-the-blank. Get ready. We had Jordan Cornette and EJ Manuel on the set in the ballroom with Coach Hafley, and they started the visit by saying, such a success last season. What are the expectations now for this offense that we weren't expecting from Boston College in year two?
We're going to run the ball. We got to run the ball better this year. And I think we have more of an identity after having a full spring ball. We know what we want to do. And then the run action off of that. We want to throw the ball down the field. Then we're going to drop back. You know, we're a little different. We huddle. We line up under center. We have five step, seven step. We line up in the gun, but we're going to throw the football. And he means a lot to us. One of the things about him is just how tough he is. This guy will stand in there, stare down a backer, a defensive end, sit in there, take a hit, and release the ball. And I think he's earned the respect of every single guy on our team. Tough, tough guy. Can make all the throws.
Well, Coach, obviously last year was a COVID year, so can't really say it was truly your first year as far as it being a normal season. But what was the biggest learning lesson you had in your first year as a head coach?
A lot of learning lessons, a lot of them. And the pandemic probably made me learn a lot faster than I would have liked to. The biggest thing I probably learned as a head coach is I'm not going to get to coach quite as much as I want. Right. And I have to be okay with that. I got to be there for the players. I got to go around to the quarterback room. I got to go to the linebacker room. I got to go to the running back room. I got to go to the O-line room. And I got to show all the groups that I'm their head coach. I can't spend the whole practice period down with the defense, even though I'd love to. I got to go over on the offensive side. I can't root for the defense every single practice as much as I'd love it. I got to, like, slap Phil a high five when he completes a pass, even though I'm not
even
happy.
Like,
but I got to be the head coach, right. You know, and that's the biggest thing that I've learned. I got a great staff. I got three great coordinators and great assistants, and I got to let them coach. And I got to help, but I got to be the head coach.
Well, so let's talk about that defense. Let's talk about recruiting because you knocked it out of the park. The best recruiting class for Boston College this year in 2021 in the ESPN 300 era. C.J. Burton, a big part of that coming into that secondary, a corner, very highly ranked, will help you there. What kind of impact can he have for you guys this season?
I think he's going to have an impact. I think there's quite a few freshmen who are going to have playing time, especially on the defensive side. We're younger on defense. We've got a lot of guys back on offense. I tell the team all the time, if a guy on our team deserves to play, I'm going to play him. And if that means we rotate in corners, nickel, safety, D-line, linebackers, that's what we're going to do. And we're going to get those guys ready to play. But staff's done a phenomenal job of recruiting, and our players do an unbelievable job recruiting. And it's been a lot of fun to see and be a part of.
Well, Coach, when I watched you guys on tape last year, and Jordan, you talk about the BC of pass. You guys, the DBs to me, Coach, they look like the ones you had at Ohio State, that you had, that I went against at Tampa when you were the defensive coordinator at Tampa Bay. Where did that growth come from, those guys, as far as their confidence and just their moxie and their swag out there on the field? Where did that come from?
Well, I want to give credit to the DB coach. Coaches are. I want those guys to be fearless. I don't want them to be afraid of getting a pass interference call. I don't want to be paralyzed when the ball's in the air. Go play the ball, you know. Go try to make a play. Don't be afraid to make plays. And that's what playing DB is all about. You can't be tentative. You're going to give up catches. You're going to get a PI, and it's okay. You know, slap them on the back, man. Go. You're still better than them. Go cover them the next time. And that's the mentality. I just want them to practice so hard, compete so hard, and on game day be fearless. And go try to make plays down the field. And if you don't, line up and you're still the man. And that's what I'm trying to build with that group.
So it sounds like, Coach, that's a lot of the philosophy defensively, and it reflects in the stats, right? I mean, you guys recovered 12 fumbles last year, the most in the ACC. So it speaks to being opportunistic. Is that something that you push on these guys when you say go make a play? It's also go get the football.
Absolutely. The two things we talk about is eliminate explosives and attacking the football. And that's how I believe you win football games. And it's everything we talk about in practice. I want our whole team to play fearless. There's none of this when you line up, hey, move to the left, move to the right. But no, like when we get to that field on Saturday, the work's done. Go let it rip. Play with confidence. Have fun with each other. Enjoy it. But be fearless and go make plays. Offense, defense, special teams, I want the whole team having that attitude. I'm not going to grab a guy and scream at him on game day if he tries to make a play and it doesn't work out. Now, if he does something that he shouldn't be doing, I'll let him know about it. But a guy makes a mistake, Phil throws an interception, let the next one rip. DB doesn't make a play, you're still the man, go out and get it. And that's the whole mentality of our football team right now.
Well, Coach, obviously we all know name, image, and likeness has been a huge thing all of college football, all of the country has experienced right now. How has your team handled that? And where, I guess, is their priority as far as still focusing on football?
That's a good question. And when it came out, we had a team meeting. And all I asked, I said, hey, guys, I'm going to support you. And I want to help you. This is about the players. But let's do it the right way. Let's communicate. Let's be transparent. Let me help you so you don't get in a jam. Let's talk about it all. But the quickest way to be defeated is to be distracted. And this can't be a distraction for us. And this is going to be a distraction for some teams. And I got a good feel after everything we've been through together. This won't distract us. Everything we talk about is for the team. And I'm all for guys making some money, and I'm all for guys building their brand. But if it becomes bigger than the team, that's going to be a problem. And I don't think we have a group that's going to let that happen.
Well, we talk about name, image, and likeness. I think of the image of Zay Flowers, an image of him just out there being explosive, making plays, stretching the defense, getting vertical. Where would you like to see him take that next step and evolve his game?
Just consistency. You know, when we got here, he was talked about as a jet sweep, reverse, bubble screen guy. And we soon found out that he wasn't. He could run all the routes in the route tree. He could stretch the field. He can run intermediate routes. He can run option routes. And now I think it's consistency. And doing it in every practice, doing it in every game. Because now, you know, the word's out. He's going to have more than one person over there paying attention to him. So he's going to have some adversity. And it could be early on when teams are trying to take him away. Now we'll find ways to move him around and do all those things. Just consistency. He's a special guy. He's the type of guy, lights up a room. Big smile, ton of energy, incredible human being. Never had a bad day in his life, that type of guy. You guys would love to be around him. But he's an explosive guy. And short, not small, very strong. Yeah. One of the strongest guys on our football team.
Awesome. Well, Coach, I have a huge, affinity for Phil Jurkovec. When I watch him on tape, to me, he jumps out as an NFL guy.
You got a chance to meet him yet?
I met him. I got a chance to talk to him in the hall.
He's out of Iowa
meeting.
Yeah,
he's out of Iowa meeting, and I love it. So how has he grown in the spring and even now going up into the summer camps? I'm sure he's been doing 7-on-7 with his teammates and things like that. What areas has he grown the most?
Confidence, leadership, the arm's there. He processes quicker now because he knows what he's doing. He'll take a check down now quicker, as you know, which in college football, check downs could go for a long way. Decision making, but just leadership and confidence when he comes out of that huddle. In spring ball, I could just see it building and building and building, and I'm so excited to see him in training camp.
Good stuff. From Jordan Cornette and EJ Manuel, Jeff Hafley. Roddy, we talked about BC yesterday. I think there's a lot to like here. Workable schedule, things of that nature. But there are going to be a lot of people who won't be as overwhelmed maybe by what BC did last year. Those that saw him. Now, those that didn't see a lot of tape of a dynamically different playing personality that Jeff Hafley brought.
Well, first off, there is no surprise that people want to go play for that guy. I mean, just listen to him. The attitude of, hey, go out there and play fearless. DBs, you get beat, doesn't matter. You're the man. Go beat him next time. You can see the improvement that he's had at his last two stops in college ball. I mean, remember, Jeff Okuda was a fringe player when he got to Ohio State, when Jeff Hafley got to Ohio State, and he rehabbed him into the third pick in the draft. The way that those DBs played last year, that entire coaching staff did an excellent job of just instilling that mentality of you're the man, go out, play hard, play fearless. Mm-hmm. And so I love hearing him talk. In terms of what to expect from BC this year, Jeff Hafley said it, they're going to be young on defense in some spots. Will they fly around? Absolutely. Are they going to play hard? Yes, because that's what his defenses do. But there's going to be some questions because of the youth and because you're missing Isaiah McDuffie and Max Richardson, two guys who played a lot of ball and who were two of the best players on that defense. So, you know, I don't know. You know, Boston College was picked third. I had them a little bit lower than that. I think I had them at fifth, below Wake Forest, below Louisville. But that's just because from a playmaker standpoint on offense, where are you going other than Zay Flowers? That's a big question. Kobe White's back, a guy that we were expecting a lot of last year, tore an ACL. Yeah. He's back. But then defensively, how do you replace some of those guys? So I would not be surprised if Boston College has a great season. But you know, I'll have to wait and see, wait a couple weeks to see how it all starts to come together. But I love the way this program is going under Jeff Hafley.
Yeah, no question about it. Eagles start home game against Colgate, high noon here on ACC Network. Yeah. Yeah. Opening weekend September.
Then, Wes, bye week. Bye week after Colgate. They're at UMass. Bye week.
Bye week, yeah. There we go. There bye we go. Week. Nice.
And get to retool. Nice little scrimmage. Well,
mental scrimmage. Great. Remind you that InPlay returns tonight. All the news with a spin from the ACC. Kelsey Riggs, EJ Manuel are there. They'll get you caught up. 8 o'clock tonight in play right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, award-winning fill in the blank. The voice of victory's here with questions. Roddy and I are expected to provide answers next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, we continue to roll along on a Tuesday. I'm making some notes ahead of fill in the blank, by the way, here. That's what I'm doing. Roddy, Roddy Jones is in for Pack. Let's quickly pivot, folks, to Bristol. Josh Macri, the voice of victory, handles fill in the blank for us. Those of you that have been in, with us before know that the voice of victory is our man on the scene here for question and answers as it relates. So there he is. Oh, the beard is spectacular.
Really good.
Sans mask.
Thanks.
Madras lumberjack look for today's show. Very nice. All right, let's go fill in the blank, shall we?
We shall, yes. First one. So, Coastal Chaos, of course, is a theme in the conference, on the show, for everything. So, the ACC Coastal champion this year will finish with blank conference losses.
I'll go first, and I'm going to say one conference loss. I'm going to say one conference loss because I think that's what it's going to take. Yeah, I know. Honestly, what am I doing here? What am I doing? I'm setting myself up for failure. But I'll go with one conference loss. Yep, just one. What are you going?
One? Going to go with one?
Yeah.
I was going to say one or two.
I'm going to go with one.
I was going to go one or two.
It's a big difference.
I'll just say two to be different.
It's a big difference, one to two.
I know, but I was going to say one, like you, and just to be different, I'll say two. I think one or two is going to be the ceiling for the winner of the Coastal. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Next, please.
I think it's a good pick.
I would bust your chops for the one or two, Wes, but we can move on. All right, expansion, obviously, the theme of the day and the week. So let's look into our crystal ball here. In 2031, which is 10 years from right now, the ACC will have blank full-time members.
I'm
going to say 14. I'm going to say 14 full-time members in 2031. I think I'm going out on a limb.
10 years.
Because with everything going on around us, 10 years a long time. 10 years a long time. Maybe it won't be the same 14, but I'm going to say 14. And here's why. It's all up to Notre Dame. It's all up to Notre Dame. And history would suggest that Notre Dame's not moving. And I don't think the ACC takes somebody just to take somebody.
All right. I'm going to go 15, and 10 years is a long time, but I'll say 15 full-time members.
And so is that Notre
I can't
Dame,
declare Notre Dame. I'm not declaring. I think Notre Dame is – look, Josh hates when I do this because he says I become Switzerland and I sit squarely on the fence here. And I do sit squarely on the fence with this. I think the 12-8 thing is going to make a difference for Notre Dame. That's just me. I don't have any insight. I don't have any. It's just from reading and everything else. I think 12-8 makes a big difference. I think 12, shoot, you can stay business as usual in South Bend. We'll talk to Pete about this coming up in the next hour. But I think if it's 8, I think the dynamic changes a little bit. So, yeah, I think that matters, but and it will be Notre Dame as the full-time member, and that would be it, by the way.
Yeah, I think the can is too far down the line on 12 for it not to happen, which is why you get no movement on Notre Dame. And then does West Virginia make sense for the league financially? Probably not. From a rivalry standpoint, it certainly does. Does Penn State make sense for the league? From a geographical standpoint, a rivalry standpoint, yes. But monetarily for Penn State, it doesn't necessarily make sense. And then who else? Like, who else do you go get? And that's why I think the ACC is going to be fine. Like, you just let all the tempest go on around you and you sit there with your 14 teams and continue to solidify. So I'm going to say 14, but it's realignment. Anything can happen.
And I'll ask the Syracuse alum involved in this program, who ironically happens to be moderating this, the move of the schools has to come. And Josh, you know what I mean by this. Syracuse had to see the wall falling in the Big East in order to make the move to the ACC. Fair? I mean, they had to see some degree of disintegration. I think when you talk about West Virginia or Penn State or things like that, if I'm one of those institutions, I have to see a degree of disintegration in order to say, yes, I want to be in that other league. I think the speculation on West Virginia is way early. The Penn State situation is a little pie in the sky when I see it in print, to be honest with you.
No, I think that's accurate. And I will resume my duties now of asking questions, not answering them. yesterday on the show, we had the privilege of unveiling the official preseason poll for the conference, which begs the question, sure, blank will jump the most spots from the official preseason poll to the final regular season standings. And just as a reminder, here is the official preseason poll.
Roddy, you want to go ahead and start pushing Louisville up the side in the Atlantic?
Louisville. It'll be Louisville, the Cards. Maybe Wake Forest, too. But Louisville being in that sixth spot, you already knew where I was going with this. It's going to be the Cards because Scott Satterfield, that offense is going to produce. Defensively, they've gotten better. Turnovers are going to be a lot more friendly to them this year, one would think. So I'm going to go Louisville.
From somebody who was going to vote Pitt second a week ago, starting on Tuesday or Wednesday, I would say Pittsburgh could move up a slot or two, but I don't have any real arguments. Louisville is the one, though. To me, if I'm going to pick somebody to make the move, it's going to be Louisville. Based on kind of all the things that set up, and you just got to believe they're not going to turn it over as much as they did last year. So there you go. Let's go Louisville there, Josh.
I like it. A nice, solid, confident answer. It's what we like to see. Of course, quarterbacks under the spotlight in the league going into this season. Plenty of them, plenty of good ones. So the ACC's leading passer this year will finish with blank yards and blank touchdowns. Fill them in.
Roddy, you get to go first.
Well, Wes, you'll be happy to know I looked into the crystal ball on this one, and I know the exact answer. It is going to be 3,727 yards of passing with 32 touchdowns. That's the answer. I don't even know if you want to go because I have foreseen it. It is known. That's what the leading passer in the league is going to have this year.
So you just threw that number out there, 3,727, and how many touchdowns?
32 touchdowns, 3,727 yards and 32 touchdowns. I didn't throw it out there, Wes. It was told to me. I looked into the crystal ball, and that was the number that appeared when I asked it that question. I can only get one question a day, and that's what I asked it today, and that's what I got.
Yeah. All right, who can follow your connection with Dionne Warwick and the psychic hotline? I'll say 35, 85, and 31 touchdowns. How's that? There you go. I think 3,500 plus is the winner in the ACC. When we come back, fast-moving show. Hour two starts with Heather Dinich. Wonder what she's been doing for the last, 96 hours or so. College football playoff, landscape changing. How does all this work? Heather on, we're going to have 12, we're going to have 8. And who might be a new customer? We'll get her feel for this right after this on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.